Welcome to the Spike Feed, your leading Magic the Gathering podcast. What is up? My name is Curtis, and I'm just your typical Spike. On the line with me, rocking a very winter Iowa look. V-neck, rugged, non-shaved face. It looks like you're ready to go cut some timber, Cameron.
That's exactly what I was going after.
Yeah.
Fashionable timber.
Fashionable timber. I like it. I like it. So, we are a Magic the Gathering podcast. We've got a ton to cover because there's news spoilers, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're going to dive deep on those, talk about their impact on Standard and potentially other formats. But we're going to start off with what we've been doing this week. So, Cameron, I'm going to lead off.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, in the words of Chicago, you're the inspiration for me.
Oh, all right. Good.
So, out of nowhere, I was like bogged down in work. Cameron calls me and says, hey, can you talk about Maverick for a little bit, record it and send it to me? And I said, can I? Right? And like any responsible adult, I'm looking for an excuse to not be working in the evenings, right?
Yeah.
So you posted this really exceptional YouTube video about accessible Legacy decks, how you can get into Legacy at a lower price point, potentially with cards that you have from Modern. Why don't you talk a little bit about that and how you came to that conclusion, man?
Well, I mean, I don't know. Like, my thing is, like, I hate seeing Legacy die, right? Like, I don't want it to die. I think it's the best format out there. We've talked about this ad nauseum on the podcast. And so I was thinking, you know, it'd be kind of cool if, like, as a Modern player, if you already have Noble Hierarchs or some other, you know, Modern playable cards that are perfectly acceptable in a Legacy, you know, meta, why not build towards a Legacy deck without having to use dual lands or anything like that? Because that's the thing I think is the biggest hang up is the dual lands. And if you can remove those from the equation, all of a sudden I think Legacy becomes a lot more accessible. And you're talking about a $300 price point for a deck versus a, you know, $1,200 price point for a deck. So we just looked at a few decks. Nick Fit, I think, is like one of the sauciest. I think it's one of the most fun decks to play. It uses a lot of Modern cards in it. You know, Maverick, obviously, might be a little bit more pricey just because of the other lands that you would need. And then I was talking, what was the other one? Oh, Black Red.
Reanimator, which is showing up online a lot.
Yeah, and I see it at my shop. It's a fun deck. It's an explosive deck. You know, some people talked about Eldrazi. I think that's another one that is really accessible if you can subtract City of Traders or anything like that. So there's decks out there. I just want more people to play Legacy, and that was my impetus to do that.
Yeah, and honestly, it's really kind of ignited me wanting to play a little bit of Legacy. Obviously, I'm Magic Online because the local scene doesn't exist for me. But that's been a thing for me is, you know, we tend to enter, not to get too behind the scenes, our really busy professional periods of the year at different times, which has really worked out for this show.
Yeah, right.
But that's me right now. And so buying into Standard on Magic Online will be really problematic because 2 weeks later I'll wake up and, oh my God, my deck's worth nothing and I haven't logged into MTGO. So drafts really ideal for that. I saw that there was Gatecrash flashback drafts and we didn't do the show in Return to Ravnica block, but I was one of the people that loved Gatecrash draft. And I mean, it's universally panned. People hate it, but I really liked it. Kingpin Pet, man. It's like one of my favorite cards of all time, but they're not doing leagues for those flashback drafts yet, which I think is a terrible mistake. Like terrible.
Yeah.
So it's like, you want me to go back in time and draft and wait for other people to finish their matches like an animal? What is this? Right? It's just like, oh, well, maybe I'll just play some Legacy because, you know, as we've discussed, Modern isn't necessarily my favorite at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what deck to play, right?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Maverick's my jam. Maverick's the one Legacy deck that I've held on to and, you know, tricked out and all these other things. But, you know, Cameron, I'm kind of asking you, now that you play more and more Legacy than I do, what would you like to see me play?
You particularly, I would love to see any sort of Loam deck. I think that's your jam. That speaks volumes about Curtis right there.
Look, wastelanding somebody's ancient tomb is not something I enjoy. It's justice. It's punishing them for their filthy, obnoxious way of cheating mana in the game, right? and all these other Eldrazi players. I don't want to say Pat Uglow's name, for example. But we've got to punish these people and kind of put them on notice, right? So for anyway, sure. Just really wanting to play Legacy this coming month, especially as the holidays hit. It'll be a good thing. And let's say I'm at my in-laws and, you know, hey, maybe I'll fire up Magic Online. So Cameron, tell me what you've been playing.
So two things. I wanted to talk first about, I drafted Conspiracy, which
what?
Was totally...
What?
Yeah. So we didn't get a tournament to fire off on Sunday because there was like all these other tournaments that happened on Friday and Saturday. So like my normal Legacy crew that I play at the shop, it was kind of small. We didn't get a tournament to fire off. But this guy bought a box of Conspiracy and I was like, I guess I'll play it.
Is this Conspiracy 2 or 1?
This is Conspiracy 2. And first and foremost, the cards, we said this before, there is incredible value in Conspiracy. I mean, just things like Inquisition of Kozilek and Serum Visions, you hold on to those. If Modern's still going to be a thing, they're going to go back up into price. You know, aside from like Show and Tell and Berserk and all these other, I think, incredible Burning Wish. I mean, we could go on and on and on about like the, is it Burning Wish? It's not Burning Wish.
Is it Cunning Wish or Burning Wish? I think it's Burning.
It's Burning Wish, yeah. So anyway, you just get a lot of really awesome cards in that. So anyway, played that. I had no idea what I was doing. I haven't drafted in ages, and especially multiplayer draft, and Conspiracy with all these other like elements that are built into it. I actually had a blast drafting the game. Playing it was not my... I'm not a big multiplayer Magic fan. I don't really... I like to have one direct opponent and just... continually attack them and having to kind of play and negotiate who you're going to attack. And I don't know, that's just not my thing. But drafting it was a total blast. I think that set, that design is, they knocked it out of the park as far as like what you can do and the type of decks that you can build toward. I just did like a red green aggro deck just because, like I said, I didn't know what I was doing. Actually won, which was kind of funny. But I think everybody else is doing like these blue, black, return to grave, you know, all these like crazy things. I'm like, I'm just going to hit you in the face. So yeah,
so
had some fun with that.
Whenever you're doing multiplayer, you know, diplomacy stuff, how does that work in Iowa? Like, that's what I want to know.
Yeah. It's very kind. I mean, we'll just say that. Yeah.
Hey, I'm going to attack you. Also, how's your mom doing, man?
Yeah.
How's Steve? I haven't seen him in a few months. Is he doing well? Is he still working at the donut shop? Is that how you...
That's exactly how it works. Regardless of that, though, I think if you're looking for value and if you're looking for money, I think Conspiracy is a fun thing to do to draft just because you're going to open up some cards that are Modern and Legacy playable and will hold their value theoretically in the future. So there's that.
Yeah, and also, Conspiracy does have certain Legacy cards, you'll recall, that aren't like widely available, and that's caused a huge problem on MTGO with Legacy, because some of those cards aren't available, or they're only available in the treasure chest, and so their prices are outrageous. We're also seeing this with Commander. I mean, hey, we've been very complimentary of WotC lately, but, I mean, guys, get this Eternal stuff together, man. Get it fixed. Get these cards widely available. I mean, I just feel like they need another Vintage Master set online, you know?
Something like that, yeah.
And to your point, and we talked a lot about Frontier before we went on the air, but to your point where you're like, if Modern's still a thing, I should say that, I mean, I feel like everybody's viewpoint is Modern is going to supplant Legacy or already has. Legacy is Vintage. Vintage is LOL, whatevs. And then, you know, I mean, isn't it crazy how that's happened in a matter of like 2 years?
It was fast, yeah.
It was very fast, and... a little disappointing. So you also played some Modern this week, huh?
Yeah, I played Modern, and I picked up two Smuggler's Copters and then some Collective Brutalities and put them into blue-black fairies. Smuggler's Copter is great. I think being able to crew like one of your Bitter Blossom tokens is huge. And that gives you an additional card draw that I think fairies has always been needing. But Collective Brutality, I hadn't played it ever. And it's really good. Like, I really, really, really like that card. I don't know if it's, like, exactly what you want to be playing in fairies, but for me it helps with... I have, like, one Tassigar that I play in fairies just because I think there's great value in Tassigar. And, you know, being able to discard some additional cards, I think, helps with, like, your Tasker build. Yeah, and, like, the abilities on Collective Brutality are just really, really powerful. So, totally dig that. That card for Blue-Black Fairies, I think it helps give the deck a little bit more legs in the modern meta that I've been playing lately. Yeah, and then Smuggler's Copter is good. I mean, I don't know if it's, like, knock out of the park amazing, but it's good, you know, so
it's that good in standard.
Yes, I mean,
we can agree with
I'm sorry, I'm talking about modern, but went 2-2, which wasn't bad. I mean, like, my modern performances lately have been pathetic and awful and laughable, so 2-2 I was pretty happy with.
But you said, I mean, you've also said your shop is pretty much in line with the competitive online scene, right, where there's a lot of dredge, lots
dredge,
of
infect,
Naya burn,
and
so I applaud your efforts in playing the fairies in the face of those decks.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not like I wake up every morning going, man, if I could only play fairies against modern dredge, you know, no thanks. I mean, get those ley lines of the void, right?
Right. Yeah.
Anyway, Cameron, so we have a ton of spoilers. That's what we're going to spend our middle segment on. So we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. All right, guys, welcome back. So we have some Aether Revolt spoilers. Am I supposed to pronounce it Aether or Aether? I can never get that correct.
I think it's you're good both ways.
I like that. Okay, so we've got some spoilers this week, mercifully. So, you know, this weird period in December where there's not a ton to talk about, we can really dig deep on these cards. I know just because of our recording schedule, almost every other podcast has weighed in on these because they were middle of the week or early in the week. It should also be pointed out, man, and I don't want to get into it too much, but some of the packaging potentially got spoiled this week for what the upcoming sets are named.
Oh, okay.
And I mean, people talked about it and said, oh, these are huge leaks. And I guess to some people they are. To me, it's like the set could be named New Kids on the Block. Like, I just don't, like, what the set is named doesn't impact me at all.
Sure.
I mean, I saw the sets and there was like an Atlantis theme looking thing, and okay, cool. I know you're excited for the potential for all your mermen and mermaids.
Oh, man, tell me about it.
Do you remember early in the show when you were rocking merfolk?
I do, yeah. I sometimes miss it, I'm not gonna lie. There's just something fun about...
Cameron, these are things you should not admit on the air. Okay? Okay?
Sure.
All right, so that all aside, we've got some new cards to talk about that were spoiled. I'm going to start you off, Cameron, with Ajani Unyielding.
That's right. Ajani Unyielding. It's new Ajani Planeswalker with a casting cost of 4 colorless, a green, and a white. +2. Oh, and he starts out with a loyalty of 4. +2, reveal the top 3 cards from your library, put all non-land permanent cards revealed this way into your hand and the rest on the bottom of your library in any order. -2, exile target creature, its controller gains life to its power. And -9, put 5 +1/+1 counters on each creature you control and 5 loyalty counters on each other planeswalker you control. Man, you know, this is a tough one. Yeah, I look at some for 6 for Ajani. That seems a little steep, but I don't know. I think green white does have things where you can maybe ramp to this, right? Mm-hmm. The +2 I really, really like. -2 obviously is a Swords of Plowshares, which sure is great. And I think it's a very powerful effect, but whether or not it's powerful in the context of standard, when you're exiling one of their Emrakuls, I don't know. Like, is that really giving you the advantage that you actually want? So I don't know. It seems like a decent card, but I don't know where he's going to fit in standard.
Yeah, that's yes. I'll second that.
Okay.
Basically, do you remember Ajani, Mentor of Heroes, which was our 5 mana? One
yeah,
from
the
Theros
-100 life, or what was it? You get 100 life, yeah.
Yeah, that was his ultimate. Now, look, going forward, this might see play when standard slows back down. So whenever Kaladesh is the first set, right? And then we have kind of that upcoming rotation. This card might be better because it is a really good mirror breaker if you're both playing these kind of mid-rangey decks. The problem right now is with Delirium and Blue-Eyed Spirits and Aetherworks, this card doesn't really do a ton. In fact, he's really problematic in those matchups. Now, look, six mana, get a thing and kill a thing at the same time, that's seeing play in Noxious Gearhulk, right? Mm-hmm. But the periphery around Noxious Gearhulk and that it's an artifact and that it has menace and that you can get it with Traverse the Uvenwald is the reason why it's seeing play. I honestly think if Delirium wasn't a thing and you couldn't tutor him, then it wouldn't be worth playing. Mm-hmm. But we shouldn't underestimate Swords to Plowshares. Like, if Swords to Plowshares was a card in Standard, what do you think would be the casting cost? I mean, people would almost definitely play it at 3 mana, right? Maybe 4?
I mean, 3 removal always seems pretty good in Standard, so yeah.
Right, especially if it was white, and it was, Stasis Snare is basically that, right? I have seen some people say, and I don't know how much of it is, there hasn't been a lot of people that have played with Swords to Plowshares, but I've heard some talk of, oh man, giving your opponent life in Standard is so terrible. Guys, unconditional exiling of a creature, who cares, right? Like, this is the least downside that has ever been printed. And we're talking about one of the most powerful cards ever, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's not something to sneeze at. And so I'm willing to give this a Johnny A. Okay, he might end up being a one of or whatever. The problem is the +2, because it's non-land permanence, I mean, you could just whiff and he'll die, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so I think this is clearly built for an Oath of Nissa deck that doesn't exist anymore.
Hmm, sure.
So if green-white tokens was still a thing, I think he would slide in there at the 6. The other big problem is the Nissa from last set, which is 5 mana, I think is a much better card pound for pound. Mm-hmm. And easier to cast, all that stuff, and she's not seeing a ton of play. So I want to like this card more than I do. I think if it was 5 mana, it would be much more in the discussion. Now, it should be said that the Planeswalker deck version of this was also spoiled. We're not going to go through that just for the sake of time and confusion and all that stuff. But I'm not necessarily into this one, okay? Mm-hmm. All right, so the next card we're going to go over is Heart of Kirin. You know, Cameron, your favorite piece of the lore is Kirin, yeah. Nalaar.
I was really concerned with what happened to Kirin.
Have you gotten your Kirin Nalaar tattoo yet?
Yes, it's right next to the Suntail Hawk tat.
Oh, nice. Mm-hmm. Nice. That's a nice touch. A little, maybe you could do a Boros symbol under that. I like it.
Yeah, yeah.
Are you doing right shoulder blade, like right under your trap?
Yes, with the fist or whatever it is. So, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, I can't wait to see it.
This
are you
is
gonna
how
color
much
it?
I love lore. Yeah, of course.
Okay.
Yep.
Anyway, Heart of Kirin, 2 mana for a 4/4 vehicle with flying and vigilance, crew 3. You may remove a loyalty counter from a planeswalker you control rather than pay Heart of Kirin's crew cost. So, this is a super interesting vehicle. I think it's very aggressively costed and very powerful. I don't know how often the alternate crew cost thing will come up.
Mm-hmm.
I think you'll just play this in red-white vehicles.
Yeah. I mean, I guess you could use like a Chandra with this or something like that, right? I mean, you pay the 2 red-red, you get a Chandra. It could be something, I guess, but... Yeah, it's just an aggressive 4/4, you know, flying vigilance dude more than that loyalty thing. I just don't know if that will ever come into, like, really be a concern with this card.
Right, but that doesn't mean we should judge the card for it, right? It's just a little, I feel like it's a little, it's a little bit of sprinkled Oreos on top of a chocolate sundae, right?
Yeah, yeah.
2 mana, I mean, this card is built for veteran motorist, right? Mm-hmm. You're gonna crew up. And, you know, these Mardu vehicles, whatever that deck looks like, red white vehicles, it's just going to be an aggressive beater. And by the way, it hits hard. Now, on its face, obviously, it does not get past the Nishikana. However, with any pump effect on vehicles, right, like veteran motorist, it does get through a Nishikana or kill a Nishikana. So that's pretty important for that deck. Because currently as it sits, whenever you're playing around with smugglers, copters, and all those things, you're going to... before, like, let's say you played smugglers, copters, you had your veteran motors, you had whatever, and they go Ishikana. Like, your whole game plan came to a screeching halt, right? Mm-hmm. Because even if you were able to kill the Ishikana, you could, they just generated chumpers forever, right?
Yeah.
Whereas now, not only is this two, but you're able to kind of push through. Also, this might just replace Sky Sovereign as a whole in those decks because it's so much more efficient, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I really like this card. I just don't know that the loyalty thing is going to matter a ton. However, it is possible that it does matter, right? It's just kind of the only planeswalker we can point to right now is Chandra that it really feels like it meshes with, right?
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe, right? The other planeswalkers, I mean, Liliana would be, I mean, it would work, right? But then you're in like a heavy black aggro kind of thing, which might exist down the line. So the chat is disagreeing with us. They think the planeswalker loyalty thing is huge. Now, it does feel like the you can use a planeswalker twice when you do this, right? End of turn.
Oh,
which
yeah.
is pretty cool.
That's good value. Yeah.
But this is the card I'm most excited about that they've spoiled. I know it's a little vanilla. There's not really too terribly much going on with it, but I dig it.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Cameron, look, out of the kindness of my heart, as a way of saying congratulations for being a YouTube sensation.
Uh-huh.
I've decided to give you the blue spell. So go for it, man.
Yeah, we have Disallow. It is a counter spell that costs one blue. It's an instant counter target spell, activated ability, or triggered ability. Mana abilities obviously can't be targeted. So, yeah, we have a counter spell that is okay. I mean, the ability to have kind of like a stifle in there or like a triggered ability, that's great. But for three casting cost, I don't know. I think like a control deck is still in the same place that it has been for the past three sets or three standard blocks, I guess. It's good, but it's not great.
Okay. So the weird thing in standard is there's not a lot of triggered abilities that you would want to counter versus just countering the thing. Like all the Gear Hulks, right? You just counter the Gear Hulk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in terms of, like, maybe you have this, and then they ult a Planeswalker, and then you're like, gotcha, right?
Yeah.
That would be pretty sweet. But in terms of standard, like, this is very, very, very often going to be just a counterspell. And that's not bad. It's not terrible.
Mm-hmm.
But let's just go back in time with me, Cameron. Three casting cost counterspells. Is this the best one ever? Meaning...
Mm-hmm.
There's Dissipate. I mean, obviously Cancel is just the baseline, right?
Yeah.
There is...
Dissolve.
Dissolve and Dissipate. And there was the one where it had the Awaken. I can't remember. Scatter to the Winds, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I think the only real conversation is this better than Dissolve, which was the Scry?
Yeah.
Right? And I think it is. I don't think it's good enough for modern play.
Yeah.
So,
see, I think I disagree. I think Dissolve is better just because in a control deck, you're always wanting to know, you want card advantage and you want to know what's coming up, right? So to me, that Scry ability is so much more powerful, and on a case-by-case basis, I think it's you're wanting to Scry more often than you're ever wanting to get that activated ability. You know, I think there's more versatility with Scry, I guess.
Okay. Well,
yeah.
The interesting thing with this card is obviously going to be Torrential Gear Hulk, where this is already in your yard and they utilize a Planeswalker for, you know, Liliana's kind of example number one, but let's say they try and Chandra kill your lone creature, you Gear Hulk, counter the ability, and then you have two creatures and they've lost loyalty. You know, there are some really cool things that you can do here. So I do think, you know, Jeskai Control, Grixis Control, those decks are still floating around. They're not top tier. Mm-hmm. I'd want to say on the Goldfish like rankings, if you look, they're like, you know, fifth most played archetype or something like this.
Yeah.
And against the vehicles deck or the blue white deck, this card is pretty much hot garbage. But it'll see play. Modern, I think the three casting cost is a problem. I think Modern very desperately needs a stifle effect.
Mm-hmm.
But this is not, you know, these are not the droids you're looking for. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, right.
I mean, I wish Stifle was, let me just float this past you in Modern. I wish Stifle in Modern was Stifle meets Days, meaning Stifle effect unless the opponent pays one colorless.
That could be great.
I think that would be right on the money, right?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, the big deal is this is a cheaper Void Slime money wise. Well, that's fair. This is a really good card. I just think we're kind of tempering how you're going to use it. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously going to be a standard role player. Past that, I mean, Commander and all those other, you know, formats, I think this is going to see a lot of cube play as well. Right.
Sure.
Okay. Next up, Battle at the Bridge. I don't think this card is necessarily super great, but it does give us a keyword, which is important. So Battle at the Bridge is X and a black. Target creature gets minus X until end of turn. You gain X life, and it has improvise. Your artifacts can help cast this spell. Each artifact you tap after you're done activating mana abilities pays for one colorless. So translation, I don't know why it's worded this way. This is horrible wording. It must just be like a casual or maybe their new way of doing it. But basically it just says, hey, you can pay your mana and then you can tap artifacts to add colorless. So we might see this in, you know, the vehicles mirrors or any kind of maybe potential black aggro deck down the line.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it does look like it could be a one black for a -2/-2 or a -3/-3, which is nothing to sneeze at. It's pretty good. Right. Mm-hmm. So what do you think, man?
You know, I'm trying to think of like this with like clue tokens. I mean, I know clues aren't like as popular as they were, obviously, the last set. But that could be kind of interesting where if you're doing some sort of, maybe it is a, I don't know, Esper control sort of build or something. I don't know. I mean, that could be really, really good. And I like the potential of what this card could do, synergizing with clues, or I don't know what other type of artifacts you would probably use with this. Maybe your flying vigilance creature or something like that. I don't know.
My big question is, why is this a rare if it's not an instant? When I first read it, I assumed it was an instant.
Oh, I didn't even see that. Yeah. Yeah.
So meh on the card. Interesting on the rules text for improvise. Yeah, we're getting a lot of feedback on this. Like, apparently that's new convoked wording. And yeah, it can be used to kill things. Like, it's great in this certain archetype that it's going to fit in, right? I'm not I'm not worried about that. It doesn't feel like a rare. Now, it's probably a rare because of limited. Because in limited, this would be great, right? Unbelievable.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's okay. Next up, Cameron, I'm giving you a tough one. Pia's Revolution. Again, because I know you're wrapped up in the lore.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate
Pia and Kieran Nalar. So go for it, man.
Yeah, Pia's Revolution. It's an enchantment that costs 2 and 1 red. Whenever a non-token artifact is put into your graveyard from the battlefield, return that card to your hand unless target opponent has Pia's Revolution. Deal 3 damage to him or her. Yeah, I mean, like, we've seen this type of effect before. You know, I like the idea of you're getting value, obviously, one way or the other with this enchantment on the yard. So I think it's pretty good. Once again, is it in like a red white aggro type deck, or is it Grixis where it can? I don't know. It definitely has potential. Where it fits, I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like it's combo potential. This is an archetype we're not seeing yet. Just understand that going forward, once we have all the artifact cards from Aether Revolt and Kaladesh and whatever's past that, right, we might see these kind of archetypes warp and have more of an artifact matter style deck. We just don't have that right now. you know? Mm-hmm. And so that's a little bit problematic with a card like this. There's a ton of potential here. It can do some really great things. Or it could be a 3-mana do nothing enchantment, right?
Yeah.
Again, I think the limited applications are really interesting for this card, but that's something we're not necessarily interested in covering. We'll leave that to Marshall. But mm-hmm. right now, this is just kind of a put an asterisk by, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
This is the kind of card that I have in my draft chaff, and then like 3 years later becomes a modern combo piece, and then I go and sell them. Or it's like a commander card or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. So I'm not really overwhelmed with this particular piece of tech. It reminds me a lot of... Do you remember Aggressive Mining, Cameron?
Yeah. What was that? You like sacrificed lands, right? And you could draw cards?
Yeah. So it reminds me of that. And I bought my playset of that for a quarter a piece, and they're just sitting somewhere, right?
Sure, yeah.
And my incredibly organized collection.
Uh-huh.
Just
uh-huh.
waiting for me to pounce, like hashtag MTG finance shark that I am. You know what I'm saying? Getting out there, I could make tens of cents on those things, you know?
It's true, yeah.
Okay, last card that we're going to cover, and again, I feel like we're doing the whole interesting, right? Dark Intimations, right? So this is 2, a blue, a black, and a red for a sorcery. Each opponent sacrifices a creature or a planeswalker, then discards a card. You may return a creature or planeswalker card from your graveyard to your hand, then draw a card. When you cast a hint, bolus planeswalker spell, exile Dark Intimations from your graveyard. That planeswalker enters the battlefield with an additional loyalty counter on it. Interesting.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. So let's just be real here. That casting cost, I'm excited about that particular combination of colors,
mm-hmm.
right? This is a nerfed Cruel Ultimatum. Not nearly as cool, not nearly as good, not nearly as vicious.
Sure.
And the fact that it's a creature or a planeswalker also kind of hurts. Because I'm worried that whenever I go to cast this card, it is simply a sacrifice a creature effect, and they've got 3 creatures and no cards in hand, right?
Mm.
Now, am I getting cards back out? Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But this has to be built in a certain way where this card matters. And I think it's impossible to know how much it's going to matter until we see this the aforementioned bolus planeswalker spell. What do you think of it, Cameron?
Yeah, I think in the current standard, if this is, it definitely has potential against a lot of specific decks right now, and I like that application of it. I mean, where you could conceivably, yeah, I mean, sacrifice a creature against a Gearhulk or something like that. That's huge, and then yeah, that they discarding a card is also huge. I think. Very limited potential as far as like when you're going to actually want this card and if that bolus planeswalker is even good or not. Will it fit in the Grixis control shell? You know, there's like all these other questions before I can really make a concerted, definite answer as far as whether or not this card is good and then playable.
So the chat is mentioning that, you know, if you have 4 of these in the yard, potentially that means an ultimate. Cool. I honestly see, like, look, the deck should work in such a way where you've dealt with a bunch of little threats first, and that this is just killing, like, the Gearhulk or, you know, something that's a big player or piece, right? Mm-hmm. Or just getting that problematic planeswalker off the table. That being said, I really think Nicole Bolas, if he is in this set, which feels likely, maybe it'll be next set, maybe it's a plant, there's almost no way that they're going to make that card bad. Now, it might be bad within the format, meaning it's too expensive and the format gets really fast. That's possible. Mm-hmm. But I think there's just... Nicole Bolas is one of their Keystone brand cards. And mm-hmm. I just can't imagine that they make it bad, right?
Yeah. It's going to be like Ugin, probably. The power level, I think, is going to be super high of that Planeswalker.
Yeah, and I mean... Every version of Nicole Bolas we've seen before has been incredibly powerful. So I think that's very likely. So what I like the idea of is this being a plant, and then we see Nicole Bolas in the Egyptian theme set, which supposedly revolves around him anyway, and that these will drop to a quarter apiece. I scoop them up and then play some ridiculously grindy, slow Grixis control deck in standard. That's what I want, Cameron. That's what I want. Right?
You monster.
Yeah. Making them pay. But I don't, I mean, and honestly, with the presence of Aetherworks Marvel in the deck, in the format, slow grindy control might be a problem. It might be. So anyway, that's the spoilers so far. I'm kind of medium on this set so far, Cameron. I mean, do you have any overall thoughts?
Yeah, nothing is like really jumping out of me. I mean, I think that Heart of Kieran is probably the card that's got me most excited. Just because it's just a 4/4 vigilance beater, which I love. So, you know, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the blue counterspell stifle effect, which, you know, the chat gave me crap for saying I want a stifle for one mana in modern. But, you know, hey, those kind of effects I think are really valuable in certain metagames. And so, hey, we'll see what happens, man. But let's get out of this segment, come back, talk about our weeks. Welcome back, guys. So just real quick, we've got a few things to discuss with our weeks outside of Magic. So Cameron, at my behest, you did watch Sing Street. What'd you think, man?
You're totally wrong. It's an awful movie. Hated it. No.
All right, let's argue about it.
No, there's nothing to argue about, man. It's an extremely positive, fun, delightful movie. Like I had a great time watching it. It left a pleasant aftertaste in your mouth, right? It was just nice. And I want more movies like that. I just, you know, I get sick of seeing a portal in the sky over New York City that's going to destroy the world. You can only see that so many times in a movie. And so to see something where just kids having a good time playing 80s pop music, what's wrong with that?
Have you listened to the soundtrack after the fact?
Yeah, I did actually. I have it on my iTunes thing. I think if I'm being honest with myself, I prefer something like Once as a soundtrack more, just because that's more my speed of music. If I had to choose between the two, but it's good. It's very good.
I think some of the songs are really hit and miss, and especially in the context of the movie, they connect a lot better. Like I feel like if you listen to the soundtrack before watching the movie, that's a bad idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, probably.
But again, worth pointing out, so my wife watched it after I like begged her, like, hey, you gotta check it out. So I went to Thursday Night Football, go Chiefs, right? Uh-huh. And it was amazing. I don't want to talk much about going to NFL games. That's kind of a nightmare in terms of like a family experience, but it was great to go see the Chiefs beat the Raiders as God intended. But she watched it while I was away, and I was like, I just texted her back. I was like, how many tears? And she was like, lots, right? It's such an affecting, touching movie, you know? Anyway, yeah. So what movie did you want to mention, Cameron?
So it was on iTunes this week as the 99-cent dollar rental movie, and it's called Hunt for the Wilder People. Mm-hmm. It's by the director who did What We Do in the Shadows, which is a hilarious vampire kind of mockumentary. And then he's also directing the new Thor Ragnarok movie. This, however, is just kind of a small movie about a kid who is in foster care, finds the ideal foster care mother. And it's a story just about this guy, like this kid and this guy wandering through the wilderness. And it's a relationship story. It has heart. It has soul. And it is...
And it's 99 cents?
It was 99 cents. I don't know if it is by the time we're done listening to this or not. But it's super good. Like, one of the better films I've seen this year. Just a really good story. Charming story. And the kid, 13 or 14 years old, and he's an incredible actor. Really good. Hilarious. So, I can't recommend it enough. I would totally tell you to check it out.
I will definitely check that out, man. So the chat has mentioned, have we watched the new Mythbusters show, White Rabbit, on Netflix?
Yeah, I haven't yet. Have you?
I haven't yet either. In fact, I'm behind one episode of the Grand Tour. This is how my week's been, that I haven't even seen the new Top Gear, which is, embarrassing. I do also want to mention, just super quickly, Final Fantasy 15. So you are much deeper into it than I am. I'm a big Final Fantasy fan. And 13, I was not. This is like an ongoing theme of like coming back to things that I enjoyed in my youth that have kind of come correct. We talked about Metallica doing that very thing. And Final Fantasy, I'm very impressed early on. It is problematic in a lot of ways, including its depiction of female characters, including some of its wonky mechanics, but I love it. I love it, right?
Yeah. I love the mechanics of the combat. I think they're pretty satisfying, you know? I think 13 had really good battle mechanics, and I think we've talked about that. I don't know if we talked about it on the show or not, but like they're really, really good. But this, it's a little bit different. It handles like a more of like an action game, but you can change it in the settings to make it more like a Final Fantasy game where there's stop and go and a little bit more strategy involved. So that's good. I also just like the idea of these guys on a road trip doing like their classic Route 66 Southwest America road trip movie. A bunch of bros in a car camping, going to hotels and gas rest stops and whatnot. There's something kind of, for me, just really charming about that. And I like this idea of like a road trip movie and a Final Fantasy thing where there's swords and magic. So I don't know. I mean, it's like these two weird juxtapositions, but kind of like Serenity, or not Serenity, but Firefly. I don't know. Like when you combine like these two things that Cameron really, really likes and it meshes and it gels, it's just scratching all these itches that I love.
And again, so there's some problematic depictions in it, but that being said, I still feel like it's done a better job of putting character back into Final Fantasy, which has been a huge problem. 13 had some, like Lightning could have been a great character, and like in character design, and she's so iconic.
Yeah.
But they just, that story is so mishandled. And it's not like the story in 15 is great, but at least I understand what is happening, you know, which was non-existent before. And kind of 13 and 12 had some characterization issues as well. But I'm happy that they've kind of gotten this game out the door and it works and it's fun to play. Right. So anyway, Cameron, I'm giving that game a thumbs up. Not on my game of the year territory.
Yeah. Probably not for me either. Yeah.
But still a very satisfying experience though. I mean, again, we talked about this last week, how two first person shooters are my top two games of the year. I don't even know how that's happened, but to me, it's Titanfall 2 and Overwatch, and then everything is a distant third. Like, I had more fun with those two games. I mean, third place might even be, dare I say, No Man's Sky, in terms of enjoyment and what I've gotten out of it.
Yeah.
But I feel like if somebody's going to buy one game, it has to be one of those two, right?
Yeah, maybe. Although they're so deep now with like really, really good players that you may not find the enjoyment if you hop into either of those right now. But who knows? Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, we'll see, man. So anyway, Cameron, if someone would like to talk to you about any of these things, where would they find you?
That's on Twitter, @Cameron_McCoy.
And you're creating weekly YouTube video content where?
YouTube. Just search the Spike Feed. I can't remember what it is, actually.
I believe it's youtube.com/spikefeed.
There Cameron. You go. There you go.
Check us out there. Cameron's done some great stuff. You can find me @CurtisNow. Our official show feed is @SpikeFeedMTG. We will check you guys next week.